Hi, I'm Chris Grove, technology evangelist at Nozomi Networks. Thank you. If you're poking around on your screen looking for the PowerPoint slides or the video feed, rest easy. We've decided to go old school for Throwback Thursday and make this a podcast instead of a webcast. So put your headphones on, get up from your desk, and do something enjoyable while you listen, like hop on a treadmill or take a walk with the dog or listen to the podcast in digital surround sound while you work in the kitchen. It's an audio-only podcast, so we've shut our laptops, turned off the cameras, and we're going completely off script for the sole purpose of sharing the personal side of Nozomi. So buckle in, we're going to have a fun evening. If you've watched our recent webcasts, or you watch the cybersecurity space in general, you've probably heard of Andrea Carcano, known as one of the co-founders of Nozomi Networks and an expert in cybersecurity, protecting the power grid, gas generation companies, and other critical infrastructure around the world. You may also know we have a leading product in this space and are a force to be reckoned with when it comes to securing the world's infrastructure against attacks from bad actors. But we're not here today to discuss our technology, our product, or discuss anything salesy. That was brought up for context only. Marketing will probably have our heads tomorrow, but we're here to pop the hood, bringing you right up front and close to the inner workings of the mind of a Silicon Valley high-tech startup founder, an entrepreneur, and someone I'm honored to call a friend. So formalities are now behind us. Let's begin. Andrea, welcome. Hey, please introduce yourself. Good to see you again.
Good to hear you since we don't have the video today, but the fantastic introduction and thank you. It's a pleasure to have the occasion, the chance to chat with you again.
Great. So, like I mentioned, this is going to be like a personal interview, and we're just going to show the community and all of our folks out there that listen to our casts a little bit about behind the scenes of Nozomi and get to know some of the people that work at Nozomi. And you're the first one on our list here. So anyone who's ever met you or heard you or seen you before probably noticed you have an accent. So let's just start with telling me where you're from, where you grew up, like what's your town like?
Really? Really, Chris? You're saying that I have an accent? Come on.
Some people thought it was from like New Jersey or Midwest or something, but
but I think I'm improving. You know, when I moved here in the United States, I think people were like, you know, taking about between 2 and 3 seconds to detect that I had an accent and I was absolutely not from the United States. I think right now they need actually 6-7 seconds. I think it's good.
Yeah, it's great.
No, so but, where? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Telling you a little bit more about the story behind my accent. So I'm originally from Italy. So lived in many countries in my life, but born and raised up in the north of Italy, very close to the border between Italy and Switzerland. And had the chance, as I say, to live in different country, but yeah, there is where I come from.
Awesome. Yeah, I've had the honor to see that neck of the woods. It's very beautiful, very picturesque with all the mountains going up and the big lake in the middle. And it's just north of Milan for anybody that doesn't know. It's Lombardy, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yeah,
is it the Lombardy region?
It's called Lombardia with the Italian accent, but absolutely, yes, that's the region. And actually, I'm from Varese. It's a little town, as you mentioned, north of Milan, it's called the lake area where I'm from. So between mountains and lakes. So yeah, that's home.
That's awesome. So do you come from one of the typical Italian, really close families that we hear about that come from Italy, the old fatherland of some of our Americans here? What's your family like? Is it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, there is
big or little?
What do you say, Chris?
Big family or little family?
Family is, super important value, back there in Italy, as in many other countries in the world. But as you know, we have a special consideration for family there. So I have a relatively, my family is not that huge compared to other Italian family, but of course, very close. And a funny story behind my family is that every time I go back and in Varese, so I have easily the chance to meet anyone in my family. Everyone is there. So
in the same town.
In the same town, exactly. I'm not really the crazy one that basically move on the other side of the world. But aside from me, my cousins, my sisters, parents, aunt, cousins, and everyone is in the same town.
That's great. I bet you it's easy to get everybody together for some pretty awesome holidays.
Yeah, that's fantastic time. So Christmas, always, I usually do always back home and spend time with my family. So that's fantastic.
Cool. So besides your family, what else do you like to do when you have all this free time that we at Nozomi never let you have? What do you like to do? What's your what kind of interest do you have outside of work?
Of course, I'm very passionate about what I'm doing, right? So I think I feel I'm lucky because I follow my passion from the very beginning. Cybersecurity is part of my passion. So I actually, and I know now I'm going to sound boring, but I actually found myself when I supposed to not working and, you know, between quotes, I find myself to still doing stuff that in some way are related to cybersecurity and related to the company and so on. So, of course, very passionate about that. But on top of these, what I like to do, I like to do sports. I like to stay active, running, cycling, swimming, play tennis. Some of the things that I really like. I love skiing, but skiing is one of my passion, but since I moved here in San Francisco, I'm doing that less.
Well, they have some hills there.
Yeah, we have some hills. But I think there is also some place that is not bad for ski, right? And every time I move here and people ask me what I like to do and they ask me, hey, do you like ski? And I said, absolutely, I love it. And they told me, oh, there is a place here that is very close. And then I said, okay, fantastic, I need to try it. And then I check on Google Maps and was almost 4 hours driving. And then told me one more time, teach me one more time how the distance are considered differently here between, you know, Europe and Italy. So I think from my hometown, I could be in beautiful slopes and beautiful mountain in 40 minutes driving. Sometimes I was, you know, leaving office on Friday and just drive for 40 minutes up in the mountains and then ski on overnight with our TV show. So, but yes.
Doesn't take a half a day.
Yeah. It's in my bike at least. The ski also in United States.
Yeah, there's a bunch of good spots here. I'm sure we're going to one day get the opportunity to do that. I have been in a long time, but I love that myself.
I can't wait.
Yeah. So, like high tech, how did you initially get into that? Back in school, did you decide at a young age or did you decide to be a veterinarian instead and one day on the ski slope changed your mind? Or how did you find yourself in where you are today in terms of like choosing a high tech career? Like when did that start?
Aside from, you know, the dream that I have when I was a kid to become a professional soccer player or this kind of things, I was passionate about, you know, cybersecurity from the very beginning. I mean, I was passionate about technology from the very beginning when I was a kid. And, you know, if I look at back and I try to think why I get so passionate about technology, I don't know. I think probably because no one in my family was really understanding technology. And I found my sweet spot to kind of, you know, try to help other people in the family. I don't know exactly why, but very early I start to, you know, be involved in technology. And I remember that I received my first computer when I couldn't not remember exactly my age, but it was a 486 with Windows, you know, Windows. I mean, there was the DOS at the beginning, then the first version of Windows. And but as soon as we passed that phase, I think clearly remember that one of my wish was to not having a computer, but having the parts of a computer. So I basically asked for Christmas to have the possibility to buy all the parts And then I took, at that time, I didn't have internet, right? So, and no one in my family knew about computers. So I was going to the shop, try to read without buying it, you know, papers talking about technology and computers. And it took 3 months to build my own computer. I was very scared to make some mistakes, right? My parents told me, okay, we're gonna let you buy the different parts, but you know, you cannot
make don't electrocute yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah so, very, very typical geek journey right there.
Exactly.
Just interesting. Were you one of the kind of guys that helped your parents out a lot with the computers? They probably had a work project or needed to do something and they called you every time.
Yeah, that's what's happening very quickly. So I grew up and you know, I focus. I was super passionate about that. I start programming. I built a program for help my mom with invoice. My family had a very little business, and they had some. You know, they were doing everything on paper. So I think I did that in Visual Basic. I don't even remember which language I used, but yeah, I built a program for my mom. And then I get very quickly passionate about cybersecurity. More than cybersecurity was actually the hacking side of the house. I was, you know, having fun hacking my computer's friends, you know, with funny joke, like, mm-hmm. you know, printing something yeah. on the printer. Like yesterday you drink 3 beers and then I have my friends calling me, hey, the computers know that I drank. How is possible?
Right.
Yeah.
That's great. So did you go to did it take you into schooling for all this stuff, or did you discover this on your own after you were in school? Like, did you land in school and know your path right away?
I you know, since I was so passionate about all this stuff that I'm describing you, it was stuff that I learned by myself. And it was still on my, you know, I was 14, 15, 16. And then pretty quickly, I decided to focus my studies on computer science. So I started with 3 years, then I did the master, and the master was already focused on cybersecurity, and then I decided to keep going with a few scholarship. I finished my master and then I started a PhD. So, and mm-hmm. I guess focused on what? Cybersecurity.
So you landed on a PhD in cybersecurity, and along the way there, you met one of or more of our other founder, Moreno Carullo, right?
Oh yeah.
Can you tell me what was he like in school?
Yeah, I mean, Moreno is one of my best friends, and I met him. I met him actually even before my PhD, and he was. He was a super smart guy. When I met him, he was spending a good amount of time developing a program for play chess. I was, I really loved to play chess, and he was building a program that was very good, very, very good, trust me. And he was also competing. I mean, his program was competing against other mm-hmm. program for chess. And that's where we became friends, and we've been very close during our studies. I'm also his best man.
At his wedding. Best man at his wedding.
Yes. Yep. Best man at his wedding, correct. Mm-hmm. So we've been very close. And also, I'm not shy to tell you that I during my studies, I also have the chance to study in Netherlands for 1 year. Then I lived in Germany. I studied for a little bit UCSB in Santa Barbara with a scholarship. But Moreno is still the best developer that I ever met in my life. He's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you guys graduated from the same university, is that right?
Yeah, we went to the same university. The university is called in Subria. It's a little university, but pretty good in computer science up in the north of Italy.
And when you came out with your PhD in cybersecurity, and he has a PhD in artificial intelligence.
Oh, yes, right. Good point. Yes, I mean, we've been together in the university, but he decided to take a different path during the PhD. So he did a PhD on artificial intelligence, and my PhD was focused on cybersecurity. So
it's almost like you guys knew you're going to be working together one day, and you each took the right path years ago. And here we are today. You both have your hands around the exact right stuff you need to. little bit artificial.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If I look at our story back, I think it's exactly as you say. It seems that we almost decided and we pick exactly the perfect topic for what we decide to do later. The reality is that it was all random. I mean, when we did our PhD, we were just focused, both of us, in trying to solve a concrete problem, but we didn't have in mind to build our own company.
Mm-hmm. When did that come to mind? Like, when did you say, you know what? I'm going to try something on my own here. What was that like? Like, yeah.
I was, you know, I always had these things about bringing new ideas. And between us, in many, many cases, my ideas were not super smart. I was, you know, I was called the idea guy university. And, you know, I was showing up in the university to a few friends and say, guys, I have a fantastic idea. And then a few friends were telling me, really? And, you know, but sometimes they were not bad idea. But, you mm-hmm. know, aside from this attitude, after my PhD, I went to work in a security operations center on a big oil and gas company. I traveled a lot in Tunisia, Egypt, Congo, you know, where the company, Nigeria, where the company had, you know, many installations like pipelines in the middle of the desert. And, you know, when I was there trying to solve some real and concrete cybersecurity problem, I started to think, okay, wait a second. If I could use the prototype that I developed during my PhD, I think it would be easy to solve some of the problem that we have here. So I tried mm-hmm. to convince my boss and say, hey, we need to develop something in-house. I have a great idea. And he said, come on, Andrea, you're young, stay focused. You mm-hmm. just, you know, become a manager, be focused on managing your team. And then I went to the boss of my boss. And then at the end, I ended up to talk with the CIO of the company. But the outcome was, hey, we are doing oil and gas. We cannot develop something like that in-house. And that's when I went to Moreno and saying, hey, listen, I have an idea. And I know you now believe that this is one of my crazy idea, but try to listen to me. And I shared that to Moreno, and Moreno told me, I'm in, let's do it. So we both left our job, and we start from my parents' house. That's where was the office. And that's where it was up.
Many great enterprises started in mom's basement, house, garages.
Yeah.
So yeah, no. What were the early days like when you were first trying to get it? Did you have a big customer right off the bat and made it to the big league, or did you struggle initially?
No. There was no big customer. Just me and Moreno and no money, no investors, you know, just for my parents' house. I think it was crazy because my parents were very, very nice. I think they kind of did their own investment on Nozomi, because, you know, at some point Moreno had, you know, the code of the alarm at the key of the house of my parents. So, and because Moreno is a morning person, and I'm a morning person too now, but I was not at that time. I was, you know, I was more like a night guy. So sometimes I was waking up and I go into my parents' house and Moreno was already there, already working. So. But
that's great.
Great journey. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, you asked me about if we had a big customer. We didn't. And for 1 year, we struggled to convince any customer to, you know, test our product. We had an MVP. But imagine, you are, you know, first of all, we were in the north of Italy. So, and we couldn't find, it was very hard to find investors. So
hang on before you continue, I just want to summarize this. So we've got two kids just out of college, two young guys just out of college in a small town in northern Italy that want to make a industrial cybersecurity product in a space where nothing exists and you couldn't find investors. Why am I not surprised? Yeah. It sounds like it's not that easy.
That's true. And imagine, right? I mean, being in the north of Italy is not being in Silicon Valley. I someone in a meeting that I did, and people were looking at me and saying, wait a second. They basically repeat exactly what you said. And, you know, it's they say, you know, come on. I remember this this guy told me, how many technology company do you know that are from Italy that they become a gigantic company in the IT? And yeah, I couldn't answer. And then he asked me, how many fashion company do you know? How many bike company, car company? So, and I could name many of those. And he said, okay, come back to me with a good idea in this sector and I will help you. Said, okay, thank you. So no, it was not easy.
No, now instead of actually bringing him a car or a piece of merchandise, you protect the systems that build all that stuff. So practically everything he puts in his hands is kind of, you've had your fingerprint on it.
Yeah, that's correct. Absolutely.
So what was it like to get your first break? Like when the first customer said, okay, you know what? I'm going to give you a try. Let me see what you got. So
yeah,
what was that like?
So at that point, when we found the first customer, we had a we finally found some money from family and friends. In particular, one of my mentor, Paolo Bozzani, gave us, you know, 120 to be honest. So we hired one person, but still we struggled to find, you know, one customer. So I don't know how many presentation I did. I tried to every company in that area. And the outcome was all the time the same. Hey, you know, the idea is good, but guys, you don't have an office, you're a two people company. I cannot let your product get in one of my critical power plants that provide energy to the entire north of Italy or South Europe. So this is not gonna happen. So, And it was very hard. And then finally, at some point we met Enel. Enel is one of the biggest energy company in the world. And we found these two fantastic guys that Gianluigi Pugni and Federico Bellio. Yeah, both of them, they basically told us, if you are able to do 50% of what we are saying, guys, I think you're going to help us to solve a real problem. And you know, they have this specific problem. So they gave us, they trust us. So we stole the solution. You know, between us, the day one didn't go very well. We created some issue in the plant, but you know, that company was fantastic. You know, Federico, Gianluigi, and Ernesto Chara also, everyone was fantastic. And they basically said, okay, go back, try to fix it and come back tomorrow. So me and Moreno, and at that point it was one guy with us, Alessandro. So we went back in the hotel. By the way, we rented a single room because he couldn't afford to have a double room or a three people room. So we work all night. We fix the problem. We go back. Mm-hmm. We stole the solution. The installation went very well. We were able to identify the problem. And that's, let me say, our life changed from there, because we become a three people company struggling without any money to three people company with a very small contract, with a gigantic customer that was never shy to be a reference for us. And yeah, so we, after that, everything's changed. So other companies started to call us and start to trust us. And yeah, lots of things change.
How many presentations and other people or companies did you go through before you found NL?
It's, yeah, I don't know, probably I did 100 presentations. And all no. Oh, no, thank you. No, thank you. Good idea, but no, thank you. I mean, that was mainly, mainly the outcome. So, are very interesting, but you need to understand me. I cannot go to my boss and you know, bringing a product that, you know, does it come from a company that doesn't have an office. Mm-hmm. So, many of those.
Absolutely. Yep. Makes sense. But just the, wherewithal to carry through and continue to keep trying, even though you got to keep getting up and dusting yourself off and getting into the next place and just staying there until you finally found the right one is something I think a lot of entrepreneurs at heart are good at, which is handling rejection and staying focused on the goals. I also think cybersecurity people in general, especially the hacker types, they don't like access denied messages. They don't like to be prevented from getting to the next step, and they'll just hammer away at a problem until they get there. And that one step is all they need to get to the next level. And they'll just keep going and keep going until they do it. And it's a great mentality to have, I think. And the examples you just gave show how it's worth the trade-off and all the efforts to put into the stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, thank you. And I think, you know, this the good mentality to look in the positive way, both me and Moreno, we had it from the very beginning, was naturally. So if I look back, I can remember that at some point was hard, but was hard just because we didn't have money. So I you know, for example, at some point I couldn't afford the rent anymore. So I need to go back to my parents' house. And then I had a few friends asking me, hey, do you want to go out for dinner? And I was asking them, okay, tell me the restaurant and I will reach you guys at the end of the dinner. So it was these little things that of course were not easy, but on the other side, I mean, I enjoy so much all the journey and developing the software and trying to convince someone to test it was a fantastic experience.
Yeah, yeah. So once you got funding, where did you focus? I mean, where did you start to grow first, do you think? Like, where did you invest your efforts initially?
So we invested a lot to grow the product and we stay around that area, but then at some point it becomes key, you know, to identify some investors to really grow quicker the company. And the first investor was a local investor in Switzerland that gave us 1 million as a seed investment. And of course, that gave us the possibility to grow as a company. We start to establish our presence in Italy and the South Europe, Spain, France, something in Germany, Switzerland. So, and that was the first investment that we got. But the reality is that, you know, we still have in our repository internally in the company, everyone can access. There is a folder. I don't know if you ever noticed, but there is a folder called Nozomi Museum, and inside there is a presentation. It was our very, very first business plan. If I look at now that presentation, I smile because, of course, with everything I know now, I will probably completely change that presentation. But it's funny because at some point there is a slide that say, okay, in 5 years we will go in United States and we'll open up an office in United States. That's a dream that we have from the beginning, and the dream, and also we are convinced that, you know, US was the right place to be and to grow for, you know, become a leader in the technology space. So that's why after 2.5 years in the company, we start to look for investor in United States. And that also was not easy because you can imagine you are, I have an accent now. Imagine my accent 5 years ago. tried to contact the venture capitalists in the Silicon Valley, and I was telling them, hey, we have the best of the best software on industrial control system cybersecurity. We're from Italy and we're looking for an investor in the Silicon Valley. Yeah, so we get a lot of
back,
as you can imagine.
Back to being a couple of young guys in the small town in Italy, right?
Yeah.
It's like back to the beginning. But then you did it. You hammered away at it, and boom! Look at that. Now we have an office in Silicon Valley, and or San Francisco. I guess maybe not specifically the Valley, but I'm not a Californian, so to me, it's close enough.
A few investors very well known in the Valley: GGV Capital, Lux Capital, Energize. So a few very good investors invested in the company. I'm here now living in San Francisco, enjoying a beautiful view of the city from my windows. So we, of course, we still have an office back in Europe. We have actually different office right now. So that is another thing that I love, that we grow up very quickly in an international way. So we have a big office in Dubai, we have an office in Sydney, and you know, we have people spread all over the world. So a lot of things happened since the beginning.
Yeah, I can't wait to see those other offices myself. I've seen our Mendrisio offices, and they are beautiful. Big white open spaces for people to work, and I like where our threat intel team works. They have a really cool spot, and it's just right at the base of those beautiful mountains, and it's just a really nice, creative environment to be. It's pretty cool.
And to be honest, you know, one thing that also it's make the difference is that personally, I don't know people that are from Silicon Valley or from this area, they really perceive it. But, you know, there is probably Silicon Valley is unique all over the world. And if you think about technology, for me, coming from Europe, I dream the Silicon Valley as a basketball player from Europe can dream the NBA. Is, you know, if you're a basketball, you know, if you play basketball and you want to, you know, really play against the best of the best, you want to come to play in the NBA. And I think, you know, Silicon Valley represents the same for technology. So, you know, the majority of the most successful technology company in the world, they have an office here. So for me, it was like a dream also.
Yeah. So in Silicon Valley, living your dream, like tens of millions of dollars in funding, and you have the product that is literally keeping the lights on, the water flow and society going on around us. It's not like you make toothpaste or sugar. So you got a lot of pressure. How do you deal with all that? How personally, how do you take that on and manage and still seem to stay so, as you can tell on this webinar, you're a pretty even keel guy. So how do you maintain that?
there is no secrets. I live very well under pressure in general, but I enjoy so much what I'm doing, and I enjoy so much what we're trying to do for, you know, giving our contribute to make this world a little bit safer. That is, I don't know. Honestly, everything comes naturally. I don't have any specific trick. You know, I don't feel stress or like that I feel that I reached the limit. I like challenges and the culture that he built also inside the company, I think is really helping me and everyone else to leave the pressure with a proper, I don't know, in the proper way, right?
Mm-hmm. So you brought up a really good point, which is company culture. And it's something that I've noticed since I came is the sense of family and transparency and a bunch of other really good facets, but family and culture is really big in Nozomi, more so than a lot of other companies out there. What do you think is the key to building culture within a company for other folks out there that are also building companies?
Yeah, you touched a very good point. I mean, as you mentioned, I grew up with a strong family culture. And I really believe that the comparison between a company and a family can work very well. So some of our key cultural pillars come from the fact that at the end of the day, we're like a family. And also inside the company, you ended up to spend a lot of time inside the company. And, you know, before founding Nozomi, I work in big organization. And in some organization, they had the feeling to, you know, to don't mix up, you know, personal life is personal life, at work, I'm a different person. I don't believe in that. I'm exactly the same outside, inside the company. And if something happened that is funny, I like to tell it inside and outside the company. It's, you know, I think we didn't do anything special for spread the culture. We just act as the culture is part of us. And of course, every person that we hire and become part of the family, as you, Chris, you know, embrace this type of culture and add this assertive culture already in his DNA. He's our DNA. So, and we, you know, we keep going, you know, growing with the same culture. And I watching in TV something that is right now is a TV show that I really like. By the way, I suggest you to watch it if you didn't, and it's called The Last Dance. And despite of the title, The Last Dance is the story of Michael Jordan. I'm not a big fan of NBA, and I didn't know that. And it's very cool, right? And one of the things that I really loved, and I mean, it's not done yet, it's 10 episodes, I'm still on in between. But one of the things that I really loved about that show, that they show how Chicago Bulls, they were doing very well, but they were not winning the championship. And Michael Jordan was scoring 50, 60 points every match. And then they change the team manager and the coach. And the coach worked for 6 months on Michael Jordan for telling him, the team is there for helping you to succeed. And as soon as you enable your team, you will become a much better champion. And Michael Jordan, at the beginning, he was very resistant. He said, why I need to have the balls in my hands? Why the ball in my hands? Why, you know, it's that's just not happening. And as soon as he realized that, you know, Chicago Bulls start winning, and they won, I think, 4, 5, 6. I'm sorry for the part, you know, the people that really know NBA. But yeah, they won many championships in a row. And I believe we're trying to do the same in Nozomi. Work as a family, very close, one team. That's really part of our DNA.
Yeah, it's apparent. And yeah, very challenging for some organizations to get together. And especially the larger they get, it's hard to maintain that sometimes. And, it, you know, there could be growth and different management and different directions and strategies throughout the years, and sometimes that stuff can fade away, and it's important to bake it into the DNA very early on, sort of like what we're doing here, so that it does tend to stick around.
What's your feeling, Chris? Now, don't try to be nice just because we're having a podcast, but you know, what's your feeling? Did you feel that in the company? What do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. Before I even came on board, I felt it. I have known some of you guys for years now, and I already knew that the type of people that they are and where they would choose to work, they would be bringing that with them. So I, yourself included, you know, having got to meet you a few times before I started, it was pretty obvious to me where the personality from the company was coming from. And yeah, it's baked in to the DNA. That's the best way to describe it. And it's pretty awesome.
Every time I hear people happy to work in Nozomi, it's my sweet spot. I always feel very happy.
Usually the interviewer isn't supposed to answer questions, though. So,
oh, sorry.
You know, that's Yeah, we're off script. We're off script. So we not that we ever had a script.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So things have changed quite a bit around the world, around us. And at the same time, things have stayed the same. We're still busier than ever. And, you know, there are certain challenges that we had before COVID. And now we have a different set of challenges probably after. And that might even change later. What kind of like change do you see in the challenges that we're dealing with because of COVID?
So, yeah, I mean, I like to tackle this question in a broad way, and then go, you know, straight to the company. So what I love about Nozomi is that we took that as our responsibility to try to do something for helping the community. You know, I think as in every team, right, as in every family, there is different roles. And of course, there is roles that are perceived more important. And you know, actually there are, but everyone is doing, can do a little piece. And like in every company, you know, you can have the best developer, but if your office manager is, you know, is not there, is not doing a good job, you can fail in the same way as the developer is not good. And now I see the world for the first time. I think if I look back also the history, I don't think we ever had exactly something like that. I feel that for the first time, the world try to work all together and, you know, try to solve one problem all together. And I think it's, you know, we're not doctors. And, you know, we're not fighting like many other heroes out there every day, but we're trying to do our part. And I think what changed in the company is that we try to release, we know, as you know, we do cybersecurity. So we try to give that for free, some of our best intelligence that we had around attacks and cyber attacks using coronavirus. For us, was a very important product. It was a service part of our offering. But, you know, everything that was related to COVID-19, we decided to, you know, have that available for the community. And I know it's not a lot, but at least can help a few companies to have a better level of cybersecurity. So that's for sure is a big change. And I love to see all the company that I really felt it. And, you know, everyone from sales that they get commission from selling a product, everyone was on board to give that away for free to try to help other people.
Yeah, it's definitely been within Nozomi a team effort across all of our divisions, and then outside of Nozomi, I can see everyone is pitching in. Everyone's doing their thing, from maybe foregoing a particular activity that might be risky to doing something that might be risky, but doing it in a different way so as to protect others. I think that even just the simple thing of washing your hands used to be mundane. That's pitching in and doing something small for the world right now. So I think that even my five-year-old boy is doing something for the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you and Marina both have had different things going on within the company during all this stuff, and you're both dealing with different challenges, obviously as a business and a high-tech company, and everybody wants to move in a different direction, and there's a lot going on. And then this hits, the COVID thing, and you really kind of been peeled off a little bit into some other areas. What's the key success between you and Marina to sharing that power or sharing that leadership, and stuff like this comes along and everything just gets mixed up and shuffled, and yet you guys have, seem to be able to keep the ship in the right direction and handle that very well. So for other people out there looking to bring on a co-founder or work with someone on an important project together, do you have any tips for anybody looking to share power and maybe bring on a co-founder?
Yeah. I mean, this is a great question. I mean, it's now, aside from all, the time that I work with Moreno University and we did project together, now we're 7 years together in the company back to back. And it rarely, I think I cannot even remember once that we really had a bad discussion. Of course, we keep exchange opinion, but I, very tied, to Moreno. And suggestion. I think it's, I would say I have two things to say for who is starting an adventure like that. First of all, it's much better to do that with another person than by yourself. This is my personal advice. I think that when you dream with someone else about something and you're sharing the win and the loss that you can have, it's much better. So, and in order to keep working together, I think me and Moreno, we have two things that pretty much works very well. First of all, the trust. I really trust him. And I saw him proving again and again his quality. So I really trust him. I know him very well. I know where he's the spot where he's very, very good at, other where he's less. And the same for Moreno. But there is, behind everything, there is a big trust. And we have some specific topic that Moreno is going to always trust me, and I always trust him. There is other things that we decide together, but on the other stuff, we kind of decide at the beginning if it's going to be something related to how to develop the software. That's at the end of the day, that is your final call, Moreno. And if there is something more related to product, the direction of product, and other stuff, that should be your decision, Andrea. And so that was at the base from the beginning, and we worked very, very, very well. So I think if I need to pick one, I will say definitely trust. You trust the other person is fundamental. If you don't trust the person that is going to be next to you for all of your adventure, don't start the adventure with it.
Yeah, that's very important. Very good point there. So I'm getting some notices that some people might be done walking their dogs. And earlier you brought up, that you are a geek, and in your free time, you did things like research cybersecurity and stuff. And I'm sure that more than half the listeners to this podcast aren't doing it at work. I have a feeling a lot of these people are doing the same thing you did, and they're kicking back in their free time and learning cybersecurity, and they probably happened upon this podcast. So I think it's time to let everybody go. Do you have any departing words you'd like to share for anybody? Any great pieces of advice for us all before we wrap it up?
No, I mean, thank you, Chris. It was a pleasure to have this this chat, and it's always a pleasure to share our story. I'm always focused on the next goal, on the next milestone, but sometimes stop for a little bit and trying to look back on what we did is always good. But right now, can't wait to go back on some of the challenges that we have in front of us.
Absolutely. And looking forward, glad you brought that up. We will be doing some more podcasts, and we're hoping to maybe interview some more facets of our company, maybe some cool threat intel stuff, and you know, some other folks within the company, and kind of show people a little bit about the personal side of Nozomi and bring some faces out into the community. So Andrea, thank you so much for participating in the first one. It's been very exciting.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chris. I wish you a good day and talk to you soon.
And that folder. Have a great one. Thank you, Andrea.
Hey, thank you, Chris. That's fantastic.
Okay. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, good. I can start recording.